Welcome to It's Rainmaking Time, a special broadcast place for the transmission of new knowledge, modern-day discoveries, ancient wisdom, and the beauty and marvel of the human spirit. The man you are about to meet is a jewel of this civilization. He is the founder of the Grameen Bank, the only bank in the entire world that lends money to the poorest of the poor. He is the author of the book Banker to the Poor, Microlending and the Battle Against World Poverty. He is the only human being on earth who has dared to successfully reinvent and restructure the banking system to serve the greater good. His work and his life challenges us to rethink what we have ingested about money, collateral, lending, credit, and the entire role and underpinnings of financial services throughout the modern world. I'm Kim Greenhouse. Please join me in welcoming this beloved pioneer, visionary, businessman, and humanitarian, Dr. Muhammad Yunus. Welcome to It's Rainmaking Time.
Well, I'm delighted to be here on your show.
You know, I really should be scared to have you on the show, because anybody that has had the nerve and the gumption to take on the banking industry, definitely I should be scared of. Really, seriously, well, I'm telling you, when God invented the word wow, I think you were born.
Thank you. For me, I didn't know much about the power of the banking at that time, so I just went ahead and did it and didn't worry about what they have to say, because I thought this was something so needed. People needed the money, and nobody is there to give them the money to get ahead with their life. And looked around, and I said, well, maybe I should try it. Everybody says it cannot be done, and said, somebody has to try it out. So I tried, and it worked, and then we gradually became big.
You know, all over the world, Dr. Yunus, you know that collateral is the underpinning of getting loans for everybody. And there are many people who, A, don't know about your work, but those who do, who have even known what a great job that you've done, the tremendous work that you've done, do not feel and think that this can be applied to other landscapes. The whole concept of giving loans without collateral. And I think that it would behoove you to explain why it is that your system and your structure and your processes work. What really have you done that's different?
Well, you mentioned it already, basic thing, that we freed banking from the tyranny of collateral. Banking system is built on collateral. Without collateral, they assume that they cannot do the business of banking. And I keep saying it's almost like telling that people, human being, cannot fly because they don't have the wings. So you give up, because we don't have wings, we cannot fly. But people never accepted that. They kept on trying. They added extra artificial wings behind their back and jumped from the cliff to see if they can fly. But they continued and continued, and finally they flew. But they didn't need their own wings. They had designed the planes and so on. Human beings is a creation which always finds a solution. So how come this credit institution got stuck with this idea that only way you can do banking without with collateral? And by doing that, you, as a matter of fact, what you are saying, your basic principle of banking is the more you have, the more you can get. If you don't have anything, you get nothing. And that is very unkind. It is the people who don't have anything. They are the people who desperately need some money to get ahead and invest it and earn their money and create their income. Those who already have it, they are not as desperate as the person who doesn't have anything. So I thought this is very unfair to limit itself to collateral. So I went ahead in one village in Bangladesh back in 1976, when Bangladesh was going to a state of famine situation. There's a lot of hunger. People were dying of hunger in that year, in 1974-75. I was teaching in a university next door to a village. So I thought I should do something about it, help poor people overcome their poverty. So I would go around every day trying to see if personally I can do something to one person to help the person to overcome the daily problems. And I did a lot of tiny little things. Then I saw how people suffered for a small amount of money. Nobody would give them that small amount of money to get ahead with their life. They have to take recourse to go to the moneylenders. And moneylenders charge exorbitant interest and also impose very unkind conditionalities. So seeing this, I looked around. I said, my God, there are so many people under that situation. So I made a list of people who needed a small amount of money. And finally, when the list was made, there were 42 people on my list, and the total money together they needed was only $27. And I was shocked. Because here we are talking about economic development of the country. You are needing, you are saying that you'll be needing millions of dollars and billions of dollars for investment. We don't even care that people are not waiting for billions of dollars. They're waiting for few pennies. And that few pennies they don't have. So I went ahead, gave this $27 from my pocket and gave it to, according to the list. And people were very surprised that anybody could be so kind to give them this money. And they were so excited. Then I asked myself the question, if you can make so many people so happy with such a small amount of money, why shouldn't you do more of it?
That's lovely. And we're going to make a lot of people happy and let people know that you're here with It's Rainmaking Time. For those of you who are tuning in, we are here with Dr. Mohammed Yunus with the Grameen Bank. He is the author of Banker to the Poor, Microlending and the Battle Against World Poverty. And you're saying?
So I was thinking how to do more of it. An idea came that I should link these people with a bank. And the bank was located right in the campus. So I went to the bank manager, asked him to give loans to the people in the village, poor people in the village. He was shocked. He was surprised. He said, it's impossible. Bank cannot lend money to the poor people. I said, why not? He said, well, because they don't have any collateral. I said, why do you need collateral? All you need is your money back. If they give you money back, you can do business with them. He said, no. Banks always need collateral. So I had argued, and I couldn't solve that, and I argued with the senior officials for several months. I found no way. I couldn't persuade them to give loans. Finally, what I did, I offered myself as a guarantor. I said, I'll sign all your papers, and I'll take complete risk of those loans. And you give the money to the people that I select. So they finally agreed after about 6 months. And then I started giving loans, taking the loan from the bank and signing all the papers as a guarantor to give it to the people in the village, very extremely poor people. And interesting thing, everybody paid back. I had no problem getting the money back. And I got very encouraged because in the beginning I had no idea whether it's going to work or not. But this time I saw it work. So I felt encouraged. When I told the bank manager, look, it works. Bank manager said, maybe you did it in one village, it worked. Anything can happen in one village. But if you do it in two villages, it don't work. So I did it in two villages, it worked. Then he raised the number of villages to five. He said, you should do it in five villages. I did it in five villages, it worked. So every time I become successful, he will raise the number of the villages. And I'll go ahead and do it to show to him, demonstrate to him that it works. And finally, I found out that I should, instead of trying to persuade him, why don't I create a separate bank? Then I applied to the government to give us the license to create a bank. In 1983, we got the license, and then we started a separate bank. That's how the bank was created.
That's remarkable. I am sure that as you went to bring this concept and structure into other places around the world, that you met with resistance, did you not?
Oh, yes, a lot of resistance. You see, people mindset plays a very strange role. Once you believe in something, once you are used to doing things a certain way, once you get used to certain concepts, it's extremely difficult to get out of from those concepts and ideas. Even if you see in reality things are different, you still hold on to it. Maybe what you see now is a temporary phenomenon. So bankers started saying that, well, it may work in Bangladesh, probably it will not work in other countries. Bangladesh is a very strange country, all kinds of funny things can happen. Then it becoming popular, and other countries emulated them, started copying this methodology, and it worked. Then they said maybe it works in Muslim countries, it don't work in other countries. Then it is spread in all kinds of countries, in Philippines, in Malaysia, in China. Then say maybe it works only in the poor countries, it don't work in the rich countries. Then I was invited by the then Governor Clinton in Arkansas. He invited me to see if this will this idea of Grameen Bank could work in Arkansas to give the loans to the welfare recipients who was just sitting around doing nothing because they have no opportunity. So I was there, and between our discussions, finally we decided that he decided that he should start a Grameen program in Arkansas. So a program began in Arkansas, and in several other places within the United States, gradually the programs grew. Now it's all over the world. It's in Europe, it's in North America, it's all over Latin America, in South, in Africa, and so on. So resistance came from many different ways, from the professional people, like the bankers. They thought it won't work. It's just a temporary thing. Even if it works, it won't be sustainable. It won't be able to cover its cost. Then there was religious opposition in Bangladesh when we were doing, because we are giving loans to women, and they said this is contrary to our religious teachings. We should not give loans to the women, and we argued that religion doesn't bar women from being in business. So it was a constant hassle. Politicians opposed us on ideological ground. The extreme left thought this was a capitalist thing we are doing. Extreme right thought that this is a leftist thing we are doing. So all kinds of opposition came, but it worked on. Mm-hmm. Today, within Bangladesh, we have over 3 million borrowers in Grameen Bank.
That's remarkable.
95% of the borrowers are women. When they join Grameen Bank, they join as extremely poor women, and they take loans to start an income-generating activity, like they will buy a cow and sell the milk and pay back the bank, or raise poultry, chicken, and they will pay back the bank. And then they go for a higher loan and continue to pay back one loan and go for the other loan. And our repayment record, although it's without collateral, our repayment record is over 99%.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. No matter what the state of the economy is, there will always be time-honored traditions and special events. The Sterling Hut has been in business since 2008, offering a wide range of fantastic sterling silver products, including finely crafted mint julep cups, personalized baby shower gifts, photo albums, exquisite jewelry boxes and awards, and so much more. The Sterling Hut is an authorized Silver Star international reseller of fine silver products and anniversary gifts. The business is owned by Jewel and Bob Howard. If you would be interested in buying someone a gift of pure sterling silver or sterling plated silver, you can call 1-888-819-1009. Get a 15% discount by going to the Sterling Hut, the Sterling, S-T-E-R-L-I-N-G, Hut, H-U-T.com, and saying it's rainmaking time. They will honor a 15% discount for you. Beautiful sterling silver gifts for all of life's occasions. Manufactured in Italy and handcrafted by skilled artisans. They can also be engraved in sterling picture frames, oval and rectangular silver trays, champagne ice buckets, silver goblets, coffee and tea service, coffee pots, silver mugs, candelabras, and silver jewelry unrivaled in design and style. Go to the Sterling Hut at sterlinghut.com. And back to the show.
Why do you think it is? Because when you have proven that you have established a banking entity, an institution based on trust and gratitude that has delivered on that trust and gratitude, why do you think it is that this has not truly been implemented, for example, in the United States on a broad-based level? Because, in fact, you're really known to those who know of you and microlending, but you are not familiar with people, 8 to 9 out of 10 people on the street who are business people. Why is that when you have, when you've been doing what you've been doing, as profound as what you've been doing, and you're not a household name in Europe, in the United States of America, why do you suppose that is?
Two things I would mention. One is we are kind of a reversal of the existing banking system. We do things complete the other way than what the conventional banks would do. Like conventional banks took the word credit, which means trust, and built an institution which is basically based on distrust. Because if you're dealing with a client, you assume that he or she will run away with your money. So you tie her down with collateral, plenty of collateral, so that you still have enough to recover your money. And then also on top of that, you bring all kinds of legal instruments to tie the person down so that the legal system can enforce the conditions of the agreement so that you can recover your money. And our system is just a reversal of that. We don't have any collateral. We don't ask anybody to give us anything in exchange of the loan that we give, number one. And then we don't have any legal instrument. We don't even have a plain paper saying that if I don't pay back your money, I'll be punished like this, this, or something. We don't have those documents. So it's basically based on trust. It's opposite. It's completely opposite. So this is one. So when you talk to the conventional bankers, they get very scared to think of an institution which doesn't have a fallback position in case of a failure of a loan repayment. They think in their conventional way.
Yeah, there's a whole language.
Whole paradigm is completely different. We have given loans since we began our work, a total of over $4 billion worth of money in Bangladeshi currency. And in Bangladeshi currency, it's an enormous amount of money. And this money went out to the poor people without collateral, without legal instrument, and came back with 99% recovery rate. So it's an amazing experience for us. When we tell the conventional bankers about it, they get very scared.
What would it take to have one bank in America that would work with, let's say, $1 million a year and do small $20,000, $25,000, lines of credit for entrepreneurs with a whole new criteria based on trust and based on gratitude to try it? What if one bank started and other banks followed?
This would be a tremendous experiment. This would be a tremendous experience, because if one bank does it and shows that it can lend money to the welfare recipients, people, unemployed people, unemployed youth, and they can take the money and create their own jobs, create their own income, and pay back the loans with interest. Because even in the richest country in the world, like United States, there are a lot of people who are unemployed, who are under charity, state charity, and so on.
Most people cannot even afford housing in America. Affordable housing is almost a thing
of the past. Housing, healthcare, you name it. There are a lot of people. There are homeless people, all kinds of people, and immigrant people, people who are on the street. So if the bank provides the loan, their life will be changed right away. So it's a disgrace to have people without an income and dependent on the society, going around helplessly, not knowing what will bring next. So one bank makes this a step. It will be a tremendous thing.
Are you available in 2004?
Yeah.
In 2004?
Yeah. Why not?
I think we just have to get the first one rolling, and I think
you're
the one to do it. Are you going to be in town anytime soon?
I look forward to it.
We like to move from the conversation right into the arena very quickly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's possible. I mean, raising $1 million to get started, it shouldn't be a big problem. Where there is a lot of foundation money, there are a lot of good people, good-hearted people wants to start something in a business way. You introduced me as a businessman. I'm a businessman in the sense that I run a business.
Yes.
But I'm not in the business of making money myself.
No, I understand that.
So I want to make it clear to people, this bank that I run, Grameen Bank, as I said, we give loans to over 3 million people, poor people in Bangladesh, and 95% of them are women, and they are the owners of this bank. I don't own this bank. I just created it and then said, you buy the share and you own this bank. So they are the owner of this bank. So if the bank makes profit, that profit goes back to them. It's a Grameen bank which is created for the poor people and is owned by the poor people, and the service goes out to the poor people. And amazing thing, the bank makes profit every year, and the money that rolls in the bank comes from their own savings, deposits. They make tiny little savings. And today, nearly $300 million worth of money is in the hands of the borrowers. And all this money came from the deposits of the borrowers themselves and other depositors who put in the money in the bank. So it's a local money, goes out to the local poor people and build up the local economy. So there is no sitting idle. There is no hopelessness. They are very active people. Now women are very self-confident women in Bangladesh. Because
I'll bet
they
you
know.
Shook up a lot of the men over there. What have you done?
Yeah.
You shook it up. You're scaring all the guys over there.
Right. Yeah, but the women, then they can borrow money from any member of their family. It's not just for herself. She can borrow for her husband, her son, her daughter, anybody. So she is the representative of the family. It works much better when we enter the family through women. Initially, only thing we were trying to do is to make half and half, 50% women and 50% men. And this, again, I was arguing that the conventional banks in Bangladesh don't lend money to women. And I was challenging them that if you can show me that even 1% of the their borrowers happen to be women, I will not complain. But there is no 1% of the borrowers as women. So when I began, I wanted to make sure half of the borrowers in my program are women. So this was the beginning. And then we saw, after we accomplished that, we saw that money that goes to the family through women brings so much more benefit to the family. Children immediately become the beneficiary of the income of the mother, and household improvements immediately shows up, and a long-term vision immediately you detect. Many of the things you don't see among the borrowers, male borrowers that we have. So we changed our policy. We said now on we focus on women because it brings so much more benefits to the family. So as a result, today 95% of the borrowers are women. And wherever the Grameen idea is replicated, it's used to start a program. They do the same. They focus on women, and many programs are 100% women. And now it's all over the world which runs, and everywhere it's very successful. In Europe, there are programs in Norway, in France, in England, in Poland, in Kosovo, in all kinds of places.
Let's get a little bit deeper into the layer having to do with interest. Interest that Grameen makes per loan, and some of the processes that you've put in place to make this doable, because there could be so much administration tying people up who are who are getting these loans that it could become prohibitive, just not worth the effort. So you've streamlined something on a process level to make these function.
We made it very simple because we are dealing with illiterate, poor women. So you can't come up with complex rules and procedures and then they are lost. You can't use much of papers because papers make no sense to them because they are not illiterate people. So the basic principle that we made, that the less you have, higher priority you get. If you have nothing, you get the highest priority. Even if you say that you don't have any experience, that becomes an additional qualification rather than a disqualification, because somebody has to make a start. So if you have no experience, you are our first priority to gain that experience. We will take the risk with you. And the other principle is, right from the beginning, we designed the system in a way that people should not come to the bank. Banks should go to the people. So we go and do business at the doorstep of the borrowers. Like I said, there are 3 million borrowers of Grameen Bank. There are 12,000 staff who go out in those villages of Bangladesh where these 3 million borrowers live every day of the week. And within a week, they must meet and do business with all these 3 million borrowers. So physically, we meet them at their doorsteps.
Wow.
And we, it's a big task. And then we made it simple to pay back by making it tiny amounts. They pay all loans
on a cash flow basis, don't they?
Pardon me?
The borrower pays on a cash flow basis back the loan.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, mm-hmm. And cash flow basis, and also made it in a simple weekly repayment. As you earn, you pay back.
What kind of interest are we talking about?
Yes, there are four types of interest. It may scare you in.
I'm
in
scared
United
right
States
now.
Because you're,
I'm scared just waiting for the answer. I need a loan just waiting. You got any loans over there? You don't deal with us over here, do you?
Okay, let me start with the good news then. We offer on the deposit. I said this money comes from the deposits of the borrowers. We offer deposits. The interest rate, minimum interest rate in Grameen Bank is 8.5%. So if you put your money in Grameen Bank, you get 8.5% return on the money. And all the way, it goes up to 12%. So we give you on different types of deposits up to 12% of interest.
Wow.
So this is the one that
I'm going to put my money where you are.
Absolutely.
It's better than what's happening over here.
That's right, yes. Wait, I'll tell you here how much we charge.
Oh. And that's what we call the back end.
That's right. That's the back end. To understand the market situation in Bangladesh, commercial banks charge 15% interest on the loans. In Grameen Bank, we charge 20% interest on the loans for income-generating activity. Our cost of fund is about 10%. So we add another 10% for our service charge to collect the money and do the business and so on for 20%. Then we give housing loan, and about one-fourth our loan portfolio is on housing. And the housing loan interest rate is 8%. So it's way below the deposit rate that we offer. Mm-hmm. So we cross-subsidize it with the 20% to subsidize it with 8% housing loan. Then we also give student loan. Many of the children of Grameen families are now having a higher education. Any student of Grameen families who goes into higher education, entire financing is done by Grameen Bank. And we charge only five.
Just one moment, Dr. Yunus.
Go ahead.
If those of you are tuning in, you are tuning into It's Rainmaking Time. We are having a dialogue with the founder of the Grameen Bank in Bangladesh, who has revolutionized the banking system. He has written the book Banker to the Poor, Microlending and the Battle Against World Poverty. And we are now talking about the housing interest rates and loans that you are providing. You have Grameen, is it called Shika, your educational?
Yeah, we Grameen Education.
Yes.
Yeah. On the Grameen Housing, we have given more than 600,000 housing loans with 8% interest. And then we have student loans for education. So those who go into higher education, we give loans with 5% interest. So this is another subsidized loan, cross-subsidized by the 20% interest that we charge on the income-generating loan. And there's a fourth type of loan, which is interest-free. There is no interest on that at all. This goes to the beggar man, who goes out in the villages begging from other people. So we are started now taking them as Grameen Bank borrowers. And then all the loans that we give to them is completely interest-free. They don't have to pay any interest. When they become regular Grameen Bank borrower, then they start paying the loans according to the rules of the bank. But until they come to that capability level, we charge no interest on the loans. So there are four types of interest and under four types of programs. This is our interest rate structure. On the savings deposits, we offer them between 8.5% to 12%. That's the interest structure.
Is your life primarily dedicated to ending poverty?
Yes. It all began with addressing the issue of poverty, and then gradually I realized poverty is not the fault of the poor people. You look around as you gather experience, you find out poverty is not created by them. It's not because of the poor people they are poor. It's the system that we built which made them poor. is the policies that we adopted, it's the institutions that we built, created this poverty, and they are the victims of the circumstances rather than the reasons for the circumstances. And if you look at that, if you can remove those policies and institutions and create a different kind of policies and institutions, nobody in the world will become will remain a poor person. So how to fix that? How to go back to the drawing board and design new institutions and policies? So it's a question of building the appropriate institutions. People have, and then I discovered that people have so much energy, so much creativity in them. And now I say that every human being in the world, no matter how poor or how helpless apparently he or she is, there's an unlimited potential in every human being. It needs to be explored. It needs to be released, unleashed. So you need to give them the opportunity to unleash that energy.
One of the things that you've done, though, is that you have taken a little bit can go a long way, and the right moves, doing the right things in small but critical ways can exponentiate into something mammoth, which is kind of what happened with you, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
The other thing is that you are not just, you're really not in the banking business. You're in the poverty elimination business, and banking is your vehicle, one of your main vehicles, this economic medium. What you've done, as far as I can tell, and I've read your book from cover to cover many times, is you've reconstituted the organism, the consciousness of banking, period. On a depository level, on a loan level, on an interest level, the processes, the consciousness by which the bank treats and views the customer, the whole thing. And you said it earlier that the banking system rests upon the, what they think is a seed of distrust and the need to hold the customer hostage. And that is the only way to ensure payback. In fact, you've shown that gratitude and trust is a totally different kind of seed. Well, this is like a foreign element to most banks and bankers and business people around the world. I understand you have a venture capital division also.
That's right, yes.
I'm
saying on the banking side, what I've been saying, that the existing conventional banks are very restrictive. It works only at the higher end of the society. It doesn't come down below. And if you look in a global way, I can safely say of the 6 billion people who inhabit this planet, half of them, 3 billion people at least, have no access to financial services. They simply do not qualify to take bank loans.
They don't have a credit report?
They don't have a credit report. They don't have the collateral. They can't walk in and ask for a loan. They will, all the things the bank will ask for, they don't have them. And the bank is not interested in those people. So this is a very bad situation. I'm saying that the credit should be accepted as a human right. So it's not a question of whether bank is willing or unwilling. We have to create institutions and so that everybody have access to credit, because that's where one's earning life begins. If I have the money, I can catch money. If I don't have money, I don't catch any money. So I become a slave labor. I work for somebody else and use my body to earn money or use my brain to earn money as a salary. I cannot do it on my own. I cannot create self-employment. So this is a very restrictive situation. So we can get out of it. That's what we have demonstrated. We can do it very safely, very soundly. And Grameen Bank is a very financially sound organization.
We need you all over America. If you've
been
observing what's going on here, there are less and less jobs available. Affordable housing is getting to be like runaway inflation. The whole concept of the American dream is a thing of the past. I mean, in some ways, there is a thing called the American dream, but as we know and understand it here, the accessibility of it is becoming more and more and more remote.
Absolutely,
What is your venture capital division doing? What are you?
Venture, Venture capital is, we got interested in besides banking, in many other issues related to poverty, because credit helps people that we know. They can start their little businesses with the money, the loan they get from the bank. But there are bigger picture also. There are big things. So one of the things which has struck us is the power of information technology. We wanted to connect the poor people with information technology. And we got an opportunity and we got involved with it to create a mobile phone company or a cell phone company. So we created a company called Grameen Phone, a cell phone company, about 6 years back. Today is the largest cell phone company in the country. Our idea is to bring these cell phones all over Bangladesh in the rural areas, because Bangladesh didn't have too many cell phones. We were a very low-density telephone system. So we wanted to widen that, go to every village, and then give the Grameen women, the borrower, the poor women, the loan to buy a cell phone and start selling the service of the cell phone in the village. The village doesn't have a phone at all, any kind of phone. So she started selling the phone service and immediately makes money. Today, all over Bangladesh, in every village, there are telephone ladies from Grameen Bank who sells the telephone service. You can pick up the phone and call anybody anywhere in the world. And she becomes the beneficiary of the telecommunication system because she earns a lot of money from that. So we got very excited about opportunities in communications and so on. So we created other companies like Grameen Software, like Grameen Information Technology Park, Grameen Communications, and so on. Our idea is all these big companies that we are creating, ultimate owners of these companies will be the borrowers of Grameen Bank. To create those initiatives, new ideas, we created a venture capital called Social Venture Capital Fund. From the Social Venture Capital Fund, we are providing the initial money, and we are asking others to become shareholders in this company so that these companies become profitable company, and then selling the shares to the Grameen borrowers. So the Grameen borrower, the poor woman, will have two sources of income. One, her immediate business, which she runs and makes money, and then she will be holding shares of other companies. She already has shares of Grameen Bank. She owns Grameen Bank. Then she will have shares of Grameen Phone. She will have shares of Grameen Software. And she will have shares of any other companies that we have created. So that's the venture capital purpose.
Dr. Yunus, you've actually set up a self-replicating process.
Absolutely.
A self-replicating, not just mechanism, but a self-replicating organism in which things that touch Grameen grow, they develop, they flourish, they impact everybody, and something out of that grows, and something out of that grows, and something out of that grows. That in and of itself, in terms of its architecture, if that alone were replicated, you could do things with poverty elimination, not unlike what you're already doing at an exponentiated level all over the world.
Yeah, it's possible. It's possible. That's what we are looking forward to. And I keep saying that we can create a poverty-free world, a world where there will not be a single person who will suffer from misery. And I keep saying that the human beings and poverty do not go together, because human beings are much more powerful, much more endowed to suffer from the misery of poverty. Nobody should be scrounging around for food. That's the job of the animals. Human beings are much more superior than the animals. That's why we are a different kind of a species. We are created to contribute rather than just worry about our own food and our existence.
You know, you and I live in a world, though, that the main frame of reference that people walk around with, like the air they breathe, is that people come from that there is not enough money to go around in the world, when there is so much money that the money that's available could feed everybody all over the world and give them jobs.
Absolutely.
This is a mistruth. It's part of misinformation that so many people don't even know that they walk around thinking this and operating from this frame of reference. But it's actually a mistruth. There's more money to go around all over the world, feed everybody, and provide jobs. That's the first frame of reference, I think, that has to go.
Absolutely. Think of it this way, what you said. If I said that half the population of the world do not have access to financial services, suppose they have that services, and they use this money to create their own income. And what happens? Their extra income that they have made will go into buying things. They will buy shoes, their shirts, and they will buy the televisions, they will buy the refrigerators. And imagine how booming the business of each one of the items will be, because you are now doubling your sales on every single item. In many countries, you'll be your sale of those things will be 10 times, 20 times as much, because everybody has the buying power. If people don't have buying power, economy doesn't grow. So you have to create that buying power. It's a business. It's not something that you throw in as a charity. Charity is a very limited thing. You cannot bring it back again. You are not creating the return flow. But in a business, you create a return flow, and that continues to expand the economy.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Hi, everybody. I just want to take a minute or two and share with you that we really appreciate you listening and sharing with your friends and loved ones and colleagues. And if you like the show it. Write something really cool, really nice on It's Rainmaking Time at iTunes. We have our own store there. And like our Facebook page. If you haven't signed up for the newsletter, feel free to do that. We send a bi-monthly newsletter out. And if you like it, share it with all your friends. Another thing we wanted to share with you is that somebody stepped in and started to do transcriptions for us. We have some transcriptions already done. If you would be interested, please drop us a line. We will be posting the transcriptions that are ready for sale. That's another way to assist the show. And for those of you who are in a position to donate $10 a month or $20 a month or more, please do so. Action speaks louder than words. We appreciate you, and thanks again for listening to It's Rainmaking Time. And back to the show.
A lot of people would say that your work, even though you've explained it very carefully, really is just about the poor. And though a almost huge portion of it is also about creating a whole new generation of opportunities, businesses, jobs, opening up the whole universe of jobs and businesses and opportunities that can't otherwise be opened up. And it's not just, you are not in the business of charity per se.
Yeah.
You're in the business of establishing sustainable businesses and industries and sustainable people that would not otherwise have the opportunity. It's different.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's very different. As a matter of fact, not only I'm not in the business of charity, I'm opposed to charity. I'm saying that charity, if you push it too much, it does harm to the poor people rather than do good. Because charity is a one-sided thing. It's a one-way traffic. It takes away initiative from people. If you keep on giving monthly checks for survival, those who receive those checks don't have any initiative to do anything for themselves. So they just sit there, and their creativity is lost. And the children that are born in those families also do not have any tradition of any work or changing their own life and efforts and initiative. So you are actually destroying the basic human quality of initiative. That's not a good idea. Human beings thrive under challenges. So you have to create those challenges. And business creates that challenge and competition and so on. So I would rather say best way to remove poverty is to create opportunities for people to take on newer and newer challenges so that they can create new life for them and they can contribute to helping creating a better life for everybody else. So in the process of changing my life, I'm also touching the lives of other people because it spills over. So this is what the whole process is. If you can take the half the population, the bottom half of the population of the world, energize them, imagine the flow of things that will happen in the economy and the energy and the boost that it will get from the extra 3 billion people participating in that economy. That will touch on every single person.
We live in a finite world where, you know, you in your book, you write about how people in the early days of Grameen said to you, look, yeah. this bank is personality based. It's based on you. And without yeah. you, this thing is just not going to go. Well, we already know that that's not true. It's
that's
yes,
not true.
It's because of you. You're the spearhead. You are the rainmaker. You are the accountable point person for the delivery of the entire new institution of what this is. And you're the carrier and steward for it on a global level. And in the finite world that you and I live, you know, you and I have X number of years to be on the earth.
That's right.
And with that said, I'm going to pose one of my
yeah.
favorite questions.
Go ahead.
God knocks on your door.
Yeah.
And in your case, it's a she.
yeah. Okay. Of course.
Okay?
Yes.
In your case,
yes.
it's a she. She knocks on
Absolutely.
Your door and she tells you that you have 1 year left to live.
Yeah.
And you are, and she tells you that you really have to fast track, really set up and wrap up all of what you need done that's to carry on for generations to come.
Yeah.
And basically you're left
yeah.
being told that. What
okay.
is Dr. Muhammad Yunus, the founder of the Grameen Bank, going to do the next year?
Well, the first, yeah. The first thing I would do, I will thank God for giving me this life that I could do something and I enjoyed doing, and I thought it would be very useful to other people. So that part will be my expressing my gratitude to God for giving me this life. And the second one, if I have one more year to go, I know the most important thing which needs to be done to eliminate poverty completely, two basic things needs to be done. One is the legal framework, because all these things can be done if we have the right kind of legal framework for banking to create microcredit bank or Grameen credit banks, so that we have tiny little Grameen credit banks anywhere people would like to do that. It doesn't need a lot of investment. It needs tiny little investment, and they will take the deposits from local people and lend it out to the local poor people and help them overcome their poverty. So this is one, the legal framework and the regulatory, independent regulatory body.
When you say legal framework, you mean in
Meaning
Bangladesh
that a law
or in
which,
general?
Everywhere, because this doesn't exist. Because now the law is created in a way which created the kind of banking institutions you see. So it's also fault of the law itself. So you create a law which will create Grameen type of bank. Help them create, because we needed a separate law in Bangladesh to create a Grameen bank for the simple reason that the existing law, which exists everywhere in the world, doesn't allow to function the way we function. So I will lobby around, and I'll go around the world and meet the top executives, the presidents of the country or the prime ministers of the country, explain how important this part is, and I'll take a prototype of a legislation to give it to them, that this is a law you must pass, because this will allow the creation of these tiny little banks. You don't have to spend a penny from the government. It's the people taking initiative to solve people's own problems. So your job is to help people do that by creating right kind of institutions, by creating the legal framework. So this is one I would like.
Before
yes,
you even
yes.
go to number two, because with that said,
yeah.
you know that and when you go to meet the leaders of different countries, that
yeah.
to propose a new law or offer up the new legislation,
yeah.
that with that also comes dealing with the geopolitics, the powers that be, that are adverse to this type of institution, because it would release millions and billions of people from the strongholds of the economic situation as we know and understand it, of the banking
yeah,
laws as
yeah.
we know and understand it, and
yeah.
it would release this stronghold and this huge entity and this huge universe in which things are going on would feel greatly threatened. But of course, it only takes one or two leaders to get going and the whole thing starts like a snowball. As long as the Grameen prototype was
yeah.
not a threat to the Federal Reserve, I think all systems are a go. It really will just take some people that are ready to move. With that said, are you available this next year?
Yeah. I'm available, of course.
I was just wondering if God happened to have appointed somebody to take you out of Bangladesh for a little while to make that happen. Yeah. Are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
You sound very ready. And now I'm ready for point number two.
Now, let me respond to your comments.
Yes.
First, I'll meet the leaders of the countries and the governments. Alex, I know that there feels there are lobbies who will continue to see this as a threat. And I'll explain very clearly, in very clear terms, there is no threat. It's a win-win situation for everybody because Grameen doesn't come up as a threat to anybody. We are not taking away anybody's business. We are not taking away anybody's meal. It increases everybody's opportunity because it's a politically good, so politicians will understand helping the poor and getting them out of poverty, unemployment, homelessness is always an appealing political platform. So they will love it. It's economically sound because it brings new strength to the economy. So there is no opposition. It's not a threat to the existing banks because we are not taking away their business because they are not in that business. We are only adding a new part to that business. This will help them improve their business. So it's also socially good. This will reduce drugs, crimes on the street because people will be busy taking care of the new opportunities that they will be receiving. So this will make it very clear. And the second part that I will try to do and explain to the leaders, and particularly leaders of information technology, how important the information technology is to be spread in absolutely the most remotest place in the earth and also to the poorest person. The imagination is the poor people probably have no use for information technology. I'll try to break that imagination, that this is a completely misunderstanding of the poor people's need. If we can bring information technology to the poor people in the size and the shape, they need the information technology in that type so that they can make use of it. Like one way I describe information technology for the poor is to create Aladdin's lamp. Information technology is almost like Aladdin's lamp. The poor person talks to the digital genie in that Aladdin's lamp and tells what her problem is and how to solve that problem. And genie helps her solve the problem, give the information, give the knowledge, give the skill, and give the market she's looking for, connect her with the consumer that would be interested in her product. So she will overcome the problem of lack of information, lack of knowledge, lack of skill, and also she will overcome the problem of middleman who takes away all the benefit of the marketing of her product. Now she can market it directly to the consumer at the other end of the world because the distance has no meaning in information technology. Information technology creates a distanceless world, a language-less world ultimately. She will be speaking in her own dialect. The listener will be listening to her conversation in the language that he or she wants to hear. So a conversation can do this. The distances can overcome. The economic benefits can come. So the information technology, I will try to impress on the leaders of the information technology to address this issue of how to bring the information technology to the poorest person so that it becomes a tool in her struggle to get out of the terrible situation he or she is in. So these are the two items I'll go around to see and make sure that people understood what I have to say before I take leave.
And then when you take leave, which is what I would say, take rest. You're gonna rest in another plane, but of course you're gonna be working because, as you know, Lady Diana raised more money on the other side than she when she was
That's
here.
That's right. Yes, I hope so. I hope my ideas will continue to ring bells to many minds.
You know, they really already have, and it's such an honor to have you on It's Rainmaking Time.
It's an honor for me.
I look forward to the next year of taking you up on what you're proposing to do. You might as well get going.
Yes, you indeed, know? I will.
1 year. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
God bless you, Dr. Eunice. We'll be talking to you very soon. You've been listening to It's Rainmaking Time. This is Kim Greenhouse. Good night.